Tonight, we have one of those young men that's going to get up here and tell us some of his thoughts. And all at once, you can pick on him all you please, because he's very pickable. Very pickable. Yes? He's not even listening to me.
I am unpickable.
He's very pickable. But I've loved this kid for a lot of years now. I think he was just a baby when I found him. It was in the 80s that I found you, huh? 81, 82, 83?
No.
Old.
It was 1989.
Okay, 89. See, I was wrong. It was close, but wrong. Something like that. And he was just getting out of diapers, but he was a slow learner. And anyhow, I've loved him ever since I met him. The chicken that he is, you know. I have to slap him around every once in a while. And you can too. He's very, not only pickable, he's very slappable. So feel free. Feel free. So, what did you say? I better not have her repeat it. But anyhow. You didn't hear that, did you? Okay, we'll skip over that one. I tell you what, kids. Do we have a nice spiritual family, whether we're a little group or a big one? Look at that woman over there in red. Yeah, see? That's hiding her face. That is Judy. And she was here for a lot of years in classes and being very attentive to Wednesday and Sunday. And then she fell in love and moved away. She lives up north now. She lives up in Northern California now. And Chico. Chico, you probably know where that is. And she comes back for a visit once in a while. And when she comes, it's like she's never been away. Isn't that nice? Now, I know Ruth Ann knows her, Debbie knows her, Dennis, Barbara, yeah, I think a good many people, yeah, Reese knows her for sure. Good many people, I know Lindy knows her, she knows everybody. But this is Judy. Don't miss her, honey. And she's the one that everybody loves, the Corrine and Brian and those two kids. When they come in here with them, she's the one that made it possible for us to get acquainted with them. So anyhow, other than that, get ready for our Dennis O'Donnell.
Love you too. You know I do, because every time you ask me to come speak, I humor you and show up. Yeah. Pickles on the brain? Okay. Most of you have heard me talk before?
No.
No?
I do.
Okay.
Brace yourself.
I'll watch your eyes then. And if they start to glass over, you'll be like the canary in the cage for everybody else in the room, okay?
Over in the mine.
Yeah, in the mine. Thanks for inviting me, Melly. Yeah,
oh,
this will be fun.
Love you, dude.
I always kind of think I got nothing to say, and then I start writing, and I get pages and pages and pages of things. So I start off kind of going, and then I get desperate for time, and then I start cutting. And then the thoughts are even more disjointed than they normally would be if I tried to stick with the outline. So if things really begin to not make sense, do look at me with a real quizzical, exaggerated expression, and I'll know that I probably need to back up and slow down. Not you, Deborah. You always look that way at me. But, so, yeah, I had fun writing this, too. I recently met a scientist, a real bona fide scientist, and I'm talking to spiritualists, and I'm talking to yogi people, and I'm talking to woo-wah people, and I'm talking to people where you can pretty much just talk about any crazy thing and they'll go along with it, you know. This woman would not let me talk about space aliens or anything. And so while I was writing this, I was thinking, boy, it's sure good I don't have to stick to the facts here. Okay.
Don't tell me the facts.
Yeah. So anyway, the title of this is called From Commotion to Devotion. And a few weeks ago, I actually had a chance to give a talk at a meditation. And I pulled out part of this from that. Millie's class last night, I went to Millie's class, and Millie was talking about how the negative thoughts that the world is kind of wrestling with right now is kind of contributing to the upset of our world. And it's manifesting in things like, you know, earthquakes and tornadoes and you know, Baltimore and ISIS and various and sundry bad things that kind of one after another are kind of coming on. And that's true. I'm sure there's a subtle vibration from the energy of thought that's contributing to it. But I've been studying a lot of yoga recently, Kundalini yoga, and the guy that taught this to America, Yogi Bhajan, he was taken with how woefully unprepared America is, specifically America, but really most of the planet. How unprepared we are for the coming changes and the stresses and the strains that the transition from the Piscean age to the Aquarian age is going to place upon us all, place upon us individually, and place upon the planet and societal structures and things. So I thought I would talk about that a little bit and then meander maybe into talking about trust and relationships, because I always use this as kind of like a therapeutic process for myself. But I do it very gently with no names attached. So fear not. Everything will be okay. So, part of the reason why I'd like to talk about this topic too, it's kind of like, okay, so we're here and it's been like, I think, 2,500 years or so when, you know, 2,000 years when the last age shifted into the Piscean age. And here we are kind of right at the cusp of shifting from the Piscean into the Aquarian age. And it kind of gives us a special mandate, a special opportunity to, you know, contribute to the transition or not. But the fact that we're here now, it's probably because we're the best and the brightest, and they had to send the best down here to help make it happen. And especially those of us that are here in this room and that are spiritually, you know, oriented to begin with, you know, we're all, however you want to call it, some people call us light workers, you know, or emissaries of light, or whatever grandiose, egotistical thing you want to call yourself. You really are pretty special. So, you know, in our Aquarian age, a lot of us, really all we really know about it is that musical from the 70s or 60s, you know, the age of Aquarius, and how wonderful it's supposed to be, heralding in this wonderful world of brotherhood and love and light and peace. And if you'd listened to me talk, the last few talks that Einstein has prompted me to speak about on evolution, I explained that in reality, evolution is not all that peaceful and nice and dainty and buttercups and butterflies and peace and love. And it isn't just a, you know, it's a rather painful bursting forth into newness after a whole lot of destruction and you know, tearing down of the underpinnings that exist. And God seems to like it that way. It seems like violent turmoil and volcanoes and, you know, planets banging into each other and, you know, big bangs. He seems to like that kind of stuff. It tends to be rather unsettling, though, to us humans and our tender sensibilities. And that, indeed, is pretty much kind of what's happening right now for a lot of people, individually, again, and planetary-wise. So there's gear grinding. And it's interesting, too, because I'm no astrologer at all, but apparently the ruler of Aquarius is Uranus, which is the planet of rebellion and the planet of nervous disorders. That explains it. Here we go. So So some of these changes that are going to be going on, the differences between the Piscean Age and the Aquarian Age. First of all, the changes are big and vast in scope, and they're coming with a speed and an intensity that is going to change us, and you know it's going to roll over us whether we change or not. And so things like used to be in the old days, it was easy to hide. We kind of lived in a village kind of environment, and you know, and if you really embarrassed yourself in one village, you could just go walk 20 miles down the road. They didn't know you. You could go ahead and hide your past, and you could just make a career out of that too, and you know, rip off everybody in one village and go down. Now it's a more global environment, and you know what you did kind of follows you, and it's not as easy to hide. Things like we already know about the changing and from the patriarchal man-based society to the more egalitarian, you know, I am woman, hear me roar kind of society that we've moved into, and rightly so. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. I love Shakti energy, and that's going to be our salvation, I think, in the midst of this transition. But other things like access to information used to be only the priest had the information, or only the doctor had the information, or only the pope had the information, or you had to go to the pro, and not everybody had the information, and you usually had to pay a lot for the information. And now you can go on the internet and everybody's got the information. So it's really leveled the playing field. Used to be people would tell you what to do a lot. People, you know, you'd go to church and they would tell you what to do and what to think and you know, what was going to happen to you in this case and that case and where you were going to go when you died. And they would tell you oftentimes what you were going to be when you grew up and, you know, and who you were going to marry. And life was very defined like that. A whole lot more self-determining now. We don't put up with that kind of stuff. We want you to know that, you know, it's our life and we're the captain of our ship and we're going to determine what we're going to do and we're not going to let any institution tell us what it's going to be. And, you know, and that, if that means we have to, you know, quit the corporate job and climb out of the cubicle, we'll do that. If that means we're going to, you know, get a divorce, we're going to do that. If that means we're going to, you know, redefine our lifestyle in the manner that we think it should be and become, you know, a man even though we were born a woman, by golly, we're going to do that. Yeah. So we really get a chance to self-define ourselves. And it's very, very important to us now individually and will continue to be more so. And the idea about going within and knowing yourself, I want to introduce a word called sabhong. And you see, I'm on the first page now, and I see 10 minutes, and so I'm going to fly here in a minute. So hang on. But sabhong is a yogic word, and it kind of means going within yourself and realizing that you're sovereign, that you're a sovereign being, and you're autonomous. And it fits along with the idea that, you know, we're all coming to realize that we're pieces of God, that individually we're little bubbles of God, and we each have all the same rights and liberties and, you know, empowerment as anybody else. And as little pieces of God, we've got access to, you know, the cosmic God. So I'll talk more a little bit about that word and that concept later, but... let's see. And it used to be, I'll just mention this too, faith and foundation on our relationship with God. Our relationship used to be belief and faith and take it on word and you know, it's a mystery and just believe me because I tell you that's the way it is. And now we're moving more and more towards the idea of knowing that you know, that you know. We don't just necessarily believe things religiously and spiritually based on being told. So the Piscean Age was a whole lot about kind of the phrase to be or not to be. And defining ourselves by what we are and what we're being seemed to be a big part of it. So our social status and our self-esteem was largely tied into who we were and what role we had in society and how much money we had and how other people perceived us. And the Aquarian Age is moving us more towards an awareness that, you know, I am that I am. I be to be for myself, and it, again, it comes from within. It's an awareness from within. Some other things, too, I just kind of like to mention because it's just such a big change. The global considerations, like I mentioned, there's no isolation anymore, and decisions that we make affect vast networks of people. We can't just kind of containerize the problem and say it's way over there and it doesn't affect us. It does. It does affect us. Every little thing we're kind of finding out. But it's really even more interesting than that because all of the global constructs that we're used to having, the idea about borders and the ideas about nations, you know, don't really exist as much anymore. It's like over there in the Middle East, it's like, where's the border and who's, you know, and these people are supposed to be in this country, but now they're over here and they're friends over here. And none of these borders really mean anything anymore. It's a whole bunch of different peoples interacting with different, it's all, you know, it's like, who's the enemy and where are they? And nobody can really point and nobody knows anymore. Where, you know, where is it? You know, where is our attention supposed to be? Is that alarming, Millie? It's alarming to me. Yeah. So, all of this kind of destabilizing kind of shifts in the world and in our personal experience, it's crazy-making, basically, is what it is. And people begin to feel empty, and they begin to feel nervous, and the foundation upon which they historically have derived meaning from is shifting. The connections to people are different. They're not quite as, even though they call them virtual, they're really not. They're not oftentimes really real. Relationships are oftentimes somewhat removed. So a lot of this stuff here is creating a lot of depression in people and a lot of fatigue-related diseases. And actually, yogically, I've been taught that, you know, our nervous system for a lot of stuff that we're growing into, our nervous system isn't developed enough to even develop the attunement and the sensitivity to the world that we're growing into. So I'll let that rest because it's okay. And along with this whole change in the foundation and the personal identity is a breakdown in trust. Trust in society and trust in others and trust in ourselves sometimes. And trust sometimes in God. And I'll touch on that a little bit more too. But so the question kind of in the midst of all this is, you know, what can we do individually and collectively to kind of like make conditions suitable for humanity to embrace this transition and go forward? It almost seems kind of silly. The question really becomes more like, you know, what can we just do to cope, thank you very much, and how can we, you know, encourage each other through this evolutionary process. And so we have a choice. We can either choose commotion or we can choose devotion. And White Eagle, there's a little book of wisdom from White Eagle. I'll read this little paragraph. If I be lifted up, it says, White Eagle writes, if you endeavor to raise the Christ within you, you help to raise all mankind. You cannot make one effort towards heaven without the whole of the world, even the very earth itself being the better for it. See the responsibility that lies with you, brethren. What a glorious opportunity is yours. Don't allow the darkness of earth to deny you your birthright of freedom and happiness. of service and worship. Peace be with you, peace and great joy. So White Eagle's optimistic. Now, Jesus went on, he said, what I do, you can do, and even greater things. And he was aware of that we're all pieces of God and bubbles of God, and that we can identify ourselves with the unwavering strength and reality and unity with the cosmic oneness, with cosmic consciousness. In Kundalini yoga terms, we call it Sat Nam. Truth is my identity. And in that truth, we have our being and our essence and our truth. So we get to choose to be fully present in that truth is the challenge that's before us. And it's easy to do most of the time, especially when we're optimistic and inspired and among people that are of a like mind and we're sticking with the winners or however you want to call it. But we invariably get into a situation somewhere along the way where, and we don't like to talk about this too much, especially on the religion and philosophy that's, you know, the Facebook pages put out on all those cute little, like, you know, read this and it'll tell you how to envision handling your life. It hardly ever talks about the shadow side and the subconscious fears and the unconscious motivations and conflicts and things. And those things invariably end up bubbling up to the surface, and we end up losing our equanimity to greater or lesser degrees, to greater or lesser ability to admit it to ourselves and certainly to others. Hardly ever want to do that to others, but fortunately our nature is such that we're good at denying it so well, we hardly can admit it to ourselves. So, becoming consciously aware of our consciousness is what we're asked to do. And becoming fully aware of all of our energies, including our shadow side, part of yoga is simply becoming aware of, man, know yourself and know all of you, including the repressed energies, and as you do more of the exercises and the meditations, more of this unseemly stuff bubbles up to be confronted and worked through and ultimately embraced and let go of. So, let me shift into trust a little bit right now. Okay, we got plenty of time. We got plenty of time for lots of readings for everybody, right? I can talk just a few more minutes. Thank you for entertaining me. This is, I don't know why you keep asking me to talk, Mel.
I'm enjoying this, okay?
Thank you.
You're enjoying his thoughts?
Oh, yeah.
So, trust. They talk about trust. I've been studying that a little bit lately because I run precious thin on it a lot of the time. But I'm learning about it, and one of the things they've talked about in this one book I've been reading, and I don't have it with me, I don't know who it is, but it's a great book. It talks about trust arising from the five A's: acceptance, appreciation, affection, allowing, and attention. And ideally, of course, we got all kinds of that when we were little kids, and we just grew up with so much of that we just strive forth into the world and go forth and make it a new day, ideally. Or we have certain amounts of deficits in certain areas, and if we have deficits in certain areas, then we invariably get a little bit reactionary at times, and a shortage of those needs, unmet needs, we get a little bit graspy when we see something like, acceptance or approval or affection, or when it goes by, we can get a little graspy and kind of want to hold on to it, and we get obsessive if it goes by, or angry too. I only know about that one. But, so, what can we do? Meditating, mindfulness meditation, centering prayer, Thomas Merton's centering prayer works really well. Yoga works really good. Anything where we can get into a neutral mind space or where we can put some distance between the thoughts. So if we can watch the thoughts come and then sit in consciousness for a little bit without the next thought just immediately bombarding us so that we're just rolled over by the thoughts. If we can develop an ability to just kind of like suspend the judgment, it doesn't have to be good, it doesn't have to be bad, it could just be there and have a little space between the thoughts. And in that gap is where miracle things happen, like spirit is able to commune with you and your attunement happens and you get little images of spirit messages, or you can hear God. You can actually kind of begin to get in touch with the larger cosmic reality, and you can begin to develop an awareness of your higher soul self and its relationship to creation. And that's very encouraging in the midst of insanity. And so there's another concept called shunya in yoga, which is a point of stillness. It's a point of zero. It's a point, it's a point of expansiveness. And I've done a lot of meditations in my life, and most of it has kind of been the same kind of meditation where I kind of get up here and then I try to jump out into God, you know. And I did a meditation recently in yoga that I never had even considered before, and it was kind of like, okay, now go within, get still, and then turn your attention inside out and look within yourself and see yourself in there. And I did that for a little while, and it seemed to be backwards, and it caused. But what happened was, once I got in there, I could see my consciousness and my light filling the container of my body. And then as that happened, the container of my body got more and more permeable. But I really got a sense that, you know, that it is I, and I is it, and I'm here rather than trying to find myself out there some. Really, really, for me, it was a real watershed kind of moment. So, getting an awareness of the soul in the container, and I've always been one not really too much in touch with my body. I've tended to throw it off cliffs and things and hurt it and break it and take it for granted, being able to see the connection between my soul and my spirit and energy and my physical body, it's like an adventure. I don't know. That's all. It's like an adventure. So I'm gonna cut through some of this stuff and let me see. Okay. I want to talk about this a little bit, that idea about sabhong, about being a sovereign and autonomous person, yet we act with the integrity of the totality of the whole. And it's a balance of polarities and of conscious and unconscious and the finite and the infinite, and it allows us to hold on to a clear center of consciousness from which we can then go ahead and hope to sustain relationships with. But how do I explain this? We talk about knowing that you know, and we come to Millie's classes and Millie's circles a lot, and we have a personal experience. And basically it kind of comes down to being a personal experience of God is love. And when I had my first really mind-blowing know-that-I-know kind of experience, there was actually a circle I was in, and there was actually this little ghost figure there. Little ghost. And I could see his mustache hairs, and I mean, he was there. I've never seen anything like that since. It was like a one-time deal. but I saw this guy. But the funniest thing was, I mean, I can go around pretty much all the time and figure, you know, I'm not quite as good as, or somebody who's smarter than me, or out of my league, or not quite exactly welcome, or, well, in this strange environment I was in the circle, there was no sense of not being entirely equal with the spirit, and the love that was there was all-encompassing and inclusive of me, even though I didn't know this man, I didn't know his daughter that was there in the circle. So what was there was for me a concept of, there was just a complete and total sense of devotion within that experience. It was an experience of complete devotion, and it was peaceful, and it was the most natural thing in the world. It wasn't until the next morning when I woke up and I said to myself, wait a second, I saw a ghost last night. It did not seem to be it just seemed to be like the most natural kind of presence to be in. It was wonderful and uplifting and joyful and intriguing and all of those wonderful experiences, but it wasn't different. It wasn't different. And so this idea about devotion brings a level of peace and of empowerment to it. And so the five A's I talked about, the acceptance and the allowing and the appreciation and the attention and affection, that all of those needs were met at that moment in the midst of that devotional presence there. It was just wonderful. It was just really wonderful. So that feeling of sabhong, of the sovereign and autonomous person that we are, if we can reach out and somehow work to stay in that space, and that space of devotion and awareness of the largest sense of ourselves, then we can just flow through any of this unsettling, you know, Aquarian changes and things. And I'm going to get right down past that stuff, and okay. I want to talk just a little bit. I had an experience, I'll tell you. I had an experience. I went to a music camp with my brother, and he wanted me to go, and it was a great time. It was an Irish music camp, and we played guitar and learned Irish songs, and boy, are they sad. They're all sad songs. But my brother and I, we don't spend a lot of time together, but some of that sibling stuff came up. So the very last day, he comes to me, and he says, you know, I got the song we're going to do for the end of class, kind of little show-and-tell performance-y thing. Got the song we're going to do, and I'm just waking up, and it's like, oh, you do you? And, you know, and that's the way it's always been. He kind of comes and tells me what we're going to do. He's 4 years older than me, and whenever we needed, I've told you all this before, when we needed blood for the microscope, it was my blood, and, you know, he would tell me what was going to happen and what I was going to do, and my role in life was to do it. And so this is what he did. And it's kind of like, it's a great song for him to show off his mandolin skills, and it was just terrible for me. And musically, it was not even, it was an integer, for gosh sakes. It was something like 9/8 on the time signature or something. Like, what the heck is that, you know? It was just awful. It was just awful. And so, I guess before we started performing this, I just kind of started to talk like I do sometimes. And I just kind of did talk, tell a little story. And then in the middle of my little story, my brother, he kind of looks at me and says, you know, who told you could talk? Which is exactly like my brother, you know? It's like, thanks for the affection and allowance. Well, don't worry, I said to him. You'll get the last word, you know. And so we went ahead and did our little thing. But the way that he kind of just discounted me and I wasn't considered, it kind of touched some buttons in me. And I feel pretty good about my ability to kind of like recognize it, for one thing. And kind of I sat there with a sense of it humored me a little bit as I watched him do this. And I don't know if, you know, we actually don't communicate or talk in my family, so I don't know if he got what I was trying to message to him or not. But the trust experience, the navel work that I've been doing in my third chakra, the fire in the belly kind of navel energy that has to do with self-worth and personal power, and that works with controlling the energy exchange with others. That stuff is real big in yoga, and it's been really, really helpful for me, because like Millie said, I'm a very slow learner. And really slow. And so I wander around in life a lot with, you know, the archetype that kind of goes along with the navel center is a servant archetype. If you haven't gotten a lot of your needs met and stuff, you're kind of, proving yourself all the time. You're not quite enough, and you end up being a people pleaser and codependent, and you get that kind of stuff. The healthier archetype for that, for the healthy people, of course, is the warrior archetype, where you're able to make a big stand for yourself in life, and you focus your strength, and you assert your right to express your talents and all that stuff. And so I've actually been a little bit more on the servant type archetype of that. But I'm watching myself grow in that, and to be able to kind of like entertain my brother with bemusement rather than, you know, having a reaction to really angry and resentful and upsetment was kind of interesting, which it's not surprising that being this old that, you know, it's not like he should be upsetting me, to any great degree or anything, but it was fun to watch the progress happening. Some other things have been going on in life that I won't really elaborate on too much, but withstanding other forms of rejection and things that, you know, tend to want to crush me. And I finally have turned the corner on some of this stuff, and it's not crushing me so much anymore. Through nothing that I've done other than just kind of like breathe and stretch and do this stuff. And then the fourth chakra, and then I'm going to finish. So we have 25 minutes, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's about 25 people, so we'll have time for everybody. Okay? And I'll stop talking. But the fourth chakra, the heart center, it's about love and joy and unity. And a lot of the heart center stuff seems to almost be counteracted a lot today in relationships by people's need for autonomy, and that there's a bigger need to kind of like protect their autonomy and keep themselves safe and strong, and even to the detriment of their heart connections with people. And a lot of people think that kind of loving is kind of like a mental decision or something, and I love you because I make a decision to, and I love you unconditionally, but the actual energy exchange capability is lacking sometimes. And I'm certainly talking about myself here. So the archetypes on this is the actor-actress is the negative archetype, and they're basically people that kind of pretend that they're loving, but they don't really have enough integration to be capable of intimacy, and their fears and their negativities get in the way. And they feel safe kind of only at a distance. And I'm kind of like a come here, get away kind of guy. I'm pretty good for a while until it's time to not. And there's a lot of that. So when we're able to drop our defenses and expose our vulnerabilities, then we're able to get more into the actual lover archetype. And I'm starting to see some progress there in some of my, ability and desire to fight to maintain connections with relationships that are obviously suffering the natural entropy that dead relations suffer, And so cutting off the life, the feeling of love diminishes the life force. So if my heart is shutting down, then the life force in my navel is also shutting down. And, you know, I don't really do anything consciously on this level at all, as many people will attest. But I think the process of building up the life force in the navel has also opened up and strengthens my heart's ability to be present and less fearful and more vulnerable. So I'm going to finish right now. I'm going to give you the great conclusion. Ease the transition personally into the unsettling realities of the Aquarian age. So ease this transition. Yeah, thank you. Very good. Raise the Christ within you, and this will help raise all mankind. And this is basically our sacred assignment right now, by virtue of being spiritual leaders at this time on the planet. So how we become way-showers to a world in commotion by practicing techniques and exercises of devotion. And I'll leave it up to you to find your own devotion, but I will give you a shameless plug. The universe has given me free yoga studio space. So apparently they want me to teach yoga. And it's right over here, actually, in town here. And so I'm going to do a class on Sunday evenings. And I'm going to make it very, very affordable with easy credit terms, including nothing down and nothing per month. So you almost have no excuse now to refuse to participate in improving the Aquarian age. Don't ever ask me again. I'm only getting rich.
He's a good kid, isn't he?
Thank you for listening. Really, thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome.
It goes on and on and on. Hey, let's sing a happy song.
Yes, that's a good kid he is. So I really appreciate you people who will share your life with me. I really appreciate it.